You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for today, Wednesday, October the 12th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. We have two stories for you to talk about today. Sorry for the late recording today. I actually was on a three-hour call, radio engineering call today, to get some finer details finally worked out and get everything officially streaming out of our radio computer, and then we'll hook up streaming software, and then we're going live with GNN Radio. So I'm really, really excited about that, but that obviously took a priority today. It's been basically a year-long project with lots of twists and turns and unexpected components to it. So my main focus now is getting this done and getting GNN Radio to air. So we should expect to see that probably next week. So excited about it. But more on that when the time comes. In the meantime, we have kind of some live stuff to talk about, sort of. But we also have, I think, something we have to address. And it sort of relates to live, but doesn't. And then we'll do two LPGA things together with that piece in mind. So let's start with the LPGA Ladies European Tour piece. So this week, the Ladies European Tour is actually in the United States. And they're in the United States playing at Trump Ferry Point in just outside of the Bronx, I believe it is. Never played there. Heard it's nice. But that was the golf course that Trump agreed to finish on his dime in a lease to the city. And then that the city government ultimately tried to take away from Trump's management firm after the events of January 6th. In the end, that didn't wind up working out for the city. So Trump still manages it. I guess they couldn't find the part of the contract that allowed them to do that, for as horrible as January 6th was and probably was just cause, but they may not have had some kind of language about that in the contract. Nevertheless, that place still exists under the Trump name. It is still a Trump-managed property. And that golf course is hosting what is called the Aramco Ladies Team Series on the Ladies European Tour. It's one of several events. I believe there are four, if I remember right. But this is the one that's in the United States in New York City. It is a $1 million event. So it's not a huge purse on the spectrum of women's golf, particularly compared to the LPGA. But on the Ladies European Tour schedule, where most purses are hovering anywhere between $200,000 and $400,000 or euros, they're basically the same these days, that is a lot of money. And so there is a team, there's a 54-hole individual event, and then there is a team component to the event for the first 36 holes before they make the cut. And there's a $1 million purse for the event, as I mentioned. And you have some top players who are competing this week from the LPGA. You got Lydia Ko, who has competed in these. Nelly and Jessica Korda have been a part of it. Lexi Thompson has been a part of it. And frankly, this hasn't gotten a whole lot of media attention in this country, primarily because very few people regularly cover the LPGA. Then add in that it's technically a Ladies European Tour event, and even fewer people are paying attention to that. And that's in part just the nature of golf media these days. I'm one of those people who pays attention to it. Beth Ann Nichols is the other, and that's really it. I mean, Kent Paisley does a good job for Digest, and I don't know his contractor relationship with them, but he does a good job with that. But I don't know if he's in a full-time capacity for Digest. So you've got two people who are primarily paying attention to it that aren't employed directly by the LPGA. Steve Eubanks does a great job. He writes for the LPGA, but he's not writing for the LET. So it's a little different, even though there's a relationship there where the LPGA effectively runs the LET. So there's not a whole lot of conversation about this. And as many of you know, if you are an, well, I don't know if many of you know, but if you are an F1 fan, you know what Aramco means. And Aramco is basically a Saudi-owned company. So the Saudis have been providing the investment for this team series for several years now. And it has largely flown under the radar, even though the Saudi International drew a lot of attention when it was first created for the DP World Tour, then the European Tour at that time. And then has since obviously expanded into what now we now know as LIV and the International Series and all of that stuff. But there hasn't been the same level of scrutiny and attention on the players on the women's side who are competing in the Aramco Series. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One, the money is substantially lower. $1 million for a purse really isn't that much, especially compared to the LPGA, where the lowest purse is $1.5 million these days. So it's probably not seen as a big investment. Second, people don't put a whole lot of dots connecting the LET to the Ladies European or to the LPGA. They should, but they don't. And because there's typically a very different field for the LET in these team events, the Aramco events, compared to a standard LPGA event, people don't think about it. And then you have that you have Lydia Ko and the Cordas and Lexi and several, you know, top players competing in these events from the LPGA. They don't get the same scrutiny as, frankly, top male players who take the bigger Saudi money for what was and still remains the Saudi International, and then now to take the even bigger money than that for LIV. The $1 million purse and probably whatever appearance fees they might be willing to pay the Saudis to get Lexi and Nelly and Jessica and Lydia and some others to compete in their event. It's a drop in the bucket compared to LIV. But nevertheless, that's still an influence campaign. That is still an influence campaign. No matter what you want to kind of justify it or rationalize it as it's less money or Aramco is technically its own company. It's not the sovereign investment fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. However you would like to rationalize it, I don't think that you can. I think if you are critical of one, then you have to be critical of the other. If nothing else, you got to be consistent in life. And that's something I beg for in all kinds of walks of life, not just golf, but just be consistent. Just treat people the same way. If it's the same set of outcomes, you know, be the same regardless of the situation. Even if some of the facts change, if at their core it is the same, then you have to treat it the same. And so I feel that way about that. And if you've noticed, and you probably haven't because not all that many people are looking for Aramco Team Series results, but I have never published a field or result for the Aramco Team Series. I do cover a fair number of Ladies European Tour events with results and on the website. And that's because I think it's important to support the Ladies European Tour and what they're building. However, I really wish that the Aramco Team Series would just go away and it would offer less complication to the Ladies European Tour. And until then, I still think it's a problem. I think it is something that needs to be rectified. And I know that the Ladies European Tour has an agreement, right? And that's going to be in force. But, and that it makes sense to them to kind of take the money if no one's really raising a stink about it. But I also don't think you can just say, oh, well, women play for less money than men. Therefore, they have to take the Saudi money because this is a big opportunity for them. I don't think that's a good rationalization for not being as critical. Or even the scale of money. Don't think it works. At the end of the day, an influence operation is an influence operation if you feel that that is such. So I'm just going to be on the record. I think I have been otherwise, but on this show of saying what's happening this week is not completely equal to LIV or the Saudi International, but in some ways it's just as bad, if not worse, because it's taking money to a place that desperately needs it and then kind of looking like a good guy because, relatively speaking, $1 million purse on a tour where $200,000 and $300,000 purses reign looks way bigger versus, frankly, LIV, where you know that there are $15 and $20 million purses out there and were out there in the majors and the Players Championship and the WGCs. The big money was already out there on the PGA Tour. This just stratified it. So the best players didn't need more money. It's or frankly, even the rank and file didn't on the PGA Tour. There are 100 millionaires on the PGA Tour every year now. That's a big deal. There are 100 people on the PGA Tour making more money than the entire stated purse of this week's event on the Ladies European Tour. So it makes the Saudis look even bigger than they are because of that relative investment, that relative pay jump in terms of livelihood, particularly for a rank-and-file LET player. Your mileage may vary, your opinion may change, or it may not. You may not even have an opinion, you may not care about what I've just said here, but I think it is relevant and important to acknowledge it and just say, hey, look, you got to be consistent, and if you're not going to be consistent, then you can't believe in one thing and shoot for the other. It just is not an option. Some good news, though, for the LPGA. Aside from this criticism, the official announcement was made that the International Crown will be coming back next year. It'll be played at TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. This event hasn't been played in currently 4 years. It'll be 5 years by the time it's played. It was kind of a victim of the pandemic, for one, but also losing the title sponsor, UL, at the time. And this is a really cool, it's a unique kind of version of a team event. There are eight teams, four players, scores count. There's kind of different components to it. It's a cool event, and it's a really good opportunity for the LPGA to showcase the wealth of its talent, not only among the Korean players and the American players, but even beyond that as well. So it's really cool to see that coming back. Very excited about that. There had been some word about that from Beth Ann Nichols, that it was coming back, but the announcement had not been formally made yet, and now it's out there. So congratulations to the LPGA on that. That's really cool to have that tournament coming back. And I believe it's supposed to be an every other year affair. It's not supposed to be an every year affair, so it's supposed to not be a yearly event. But that's great to see for the LPGA that they're getting that coming back. So the other kind of story for today is, I think, a couple different things, but we're going to focus on this component of it. And that is, we're going to start with Sergio Garcia. And Sergio Garcia is going to pretty much guarantee himself that he's going to lose his DP World Tour status. He's not going to play in enough events to satisfy the requirement that he plays in at least, what's it, 4 or 5 non-co-sanctioned events for the year. And obviously, he has made his choice about that, and that means he is going to wind up losing his status, and more importantly, to the bigger scheme of things, not be able to play in the Ryder Cup. Because if you don't have your status and you can't get access to events, then you can't earn ranking points to get into the Ryder Cup, which means he's done playing the Ryder Cup. And I think that's kind of a big deal. I mean, the guy's 42 years old, and an older guy now at this point, where his career is at a crossroads, and he has made the decision that he is going to stick with LIV and not chase the Ryder Cup. And he has kind of been steadfast about this in talking about it publicly, when he's also said, I don't want to be where I'm not wanted. And so he has made a point of avoiding the DP World Tour to a degree, although he wanted to show up for the BMW PGA Championship. And then after the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, then that meant that he was going to withdraw from the event, and he cited, I'm just withdrawing, and then all of a sudden he shows up at the University of Texas game in Austin, Texas. Hook'em Horns sign up with his wife Angela, everything's fine, really no injury there, he just didn't want to play anymore, didn't want to deal with it, or maybe felt complicated about the logistics of trying to get the tournament in, whatever decision the DP World Tour was going to make at the time. Anyway, all that to say, Sergio has made his choice. And he has made it clear that he's not coming back. He doesn't want to come back into a world where he doesn't feel like he's revered as a hero. And I think that is a really interesting moment, because I think that is a similar point of view to the other former European Ryder Cup stalwarts. Lee Westwood, to a degree, Graham McDowell, certainly Ian Poulter. Those guys have kind of carried themselves in recent memories, though. They don't want to be somewhere they're not wanted, but they're still going to show up anyway and try to persevere because they have managed to score an injunction overseas that allows them to compete on the DP World Tour in the interim. I think this is a little bit more indicative of where this is going to go. Ultimately, we have seen players drop out of the lawsuit between the original 11 players, and now Liv has joined the PGA Tour, and that's a really interesting standing argument. That's a whole other legal thing, but the players have dropped out. They've said, we don't want to be the public face of that anymore. We don't want to fight it. So we're going to let Liv Golf Inc. fight it for us in a protracted battle that will take years. It will cost hundreds, if not thousands, of legal hours in payments, right? And they're totally comfortable with that. But I think the players, by and large, have kind of decided for themselves, we are done trying to go backward, trying to find some peace with the places we used to play. And Sergio said, you know, at the Wells Fargo, can't wait to get off this tour. And then he kind of, you know, went back on that to a little degree with the DP World Tour and wanted to play. Oh, well, you know, I have membership. Why shouldn't I be allowed to play? And we've put in service and time and all that good stuff. But ultimately, I think they've made their choice. And that choice is they cannot do both. They cannot represent the DP World Tour in Europe in the Ryder Cup while simultaneously playing for Liv. And I think we will probably see more of that. Ultimately, we will probably see the Westwoods and McDowells and Keimers and Stensons and all those types of guys who, whether they've been officially made pariahs or not, they're going to just mark themselves persona non grata and say, look, I don't even want the status anymore. I just want to be done. I want it to be over with. It seems like it's a burden for them to bear. And obviously they have been compensated very well to deal with that. But I think it has taken a toll on some of these guys. I think it tremendously bothers them that they are now seen by a large swath of the golf public as, like I said, pariahs, people who turn their back on what they had built. And instead of being hailed as visionaries and trailblazers who are not turning their back but turning to a new path, they're seen as turncoats. And ultimately, that's going to really dictate how they're viewed by history, potentially. I mean, ultimately, it all could work itself out. But at least on the path things are on, it looks like these guys are going to be viewed differently by history because of the decisions they made to join Liv. And I think that was kind of interesting as a contrast to something that Harold Varner III said ahead of the Saudi Arabia event this week. And he was on, interestingly enough, in a three-way press conference with Graham McDowell and Dustin Johnson. And Dustin Johnson's already made unfathomable amounts of money doing this Liv thing. I mean, he's made a lot. And whether it's an advance, partial advance, full payout up front, whatever it was, that nine-figure sum that he likely signed for, he's won millions and millions and millions of dollars already. I mean, he's in that $30 million range with Liv. It's quite a substantial amount of money. And $18 million of that is by winning their points race. They have a points race that really wasn't publicized, but it was a way to give money out, and he won. He's already won it. $18 million bucks coming his way. And he said, oh, yeah, I really, really regret this decision I made in kind of DJ sarcasm. But alongside of him, you had Varner III and you had McDowell. McDowell still kind of railing against the official World Golf Ranking and saying, oh, well, it shouldn't be use the word official anymore because it's not official, because they're not ranking our guys, blah, blah, blah. But on the other side, you've got Harold Varner III, who I think has been an interesting case study so far. And since he moved to Liv and said, you know, I know what I signed up for. Now, I don't think he knew what he signed up for, because at his introductory news conference, he seemed kind of bummed out when Bubba Watson started talking about World Golf Ranking points and him falling out of the top 50 and not getting into majors and all of those things. And it kind of seemed like news to him to a degree. And he also admitted yesterday that he didn't really know the machinations of the World Golf Ranking and that all the boxes that have to kind of be checked and for how long. And but he said, you know, Liv's doing a good job at it. Well, I mean, if you don't know, you don't know. But I think the interesting thing, again, is that he said he knew what he was signing up for. And he knew by taking the money that there were going to be consequences in public opinion, in how much people would see him, how they would see him, how they would view him, not just his bank account. And that he, I think, seems, at least the way he's speaking publicly, to accept that. He made his choice, he made his bed, he's going to live with it. And you've got kind of contrasting views among different players. You've got these 48 different people. I mean, they're not all contract players, but most of them are at this point. And they all kind of seem to be in different stages of grief, if that makes sense. Sergio is at the still very upset range, I think. And you've got others in that camp. But I think you've got Varner III, who is a little bit farther along and just says, or further along and just kind of says, look, I knew what I was getting into. These other guys already kind of signed up before me. So you saw the reaction and I'm dealing with it accordingly. Now, 3 or 5 years from now, depending on where the world is, will he look back on regret or will he just be okay with the money? I mean, DJ doesn't seem to care. And probably for good reason. That's just kind of who he is. And at the end of the day, he doesn't give a crap about what anyone thinks. He's just going to take his money and go away. And he's not going to be some kind of ambassador for the game. I mean, that's not who he is. That's not what's going to happen. He's just going to go retire and do his thing until, you know, he can't. But for some of these other guys, I think, who think about their legacy, who think about how the public views them, not just their bank account balance, it's interesting to see that. It's interesting to see that mental exercise in public. And I think it's something worth watching here as we move forward. But it's not necessarily a news story, more kind of an analysis point that, yeah, it might have occurred to some guys at this point that what's setting in and that this is not something that's going to end quickly. This is not something that's going to be settled quickly in their favor, certainly. And that reality may mean a long time of being viewed by large swaths of people as not great. And that may sting for a long time for a lot of people. We'll see. We'll see what happens. That's going to do it for us today on this audio-only edition of Two Out the First. We have been doing video versions of the show as well, but today being late in the day, I didn't want to do a video. I got to go coach some soccer here in a little bit as well. So I wanted to make sure I had this recorded and put up for you. We will do another edition tomorrow in the morning, so you'll probably get a double up on your podcasting service or on golfnewsnet.com. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. And we will talk to you tomorrow on Two Off the First.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.